You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Ryan Newman off turn four for the final time. Blaney to the outside, to the inside. Here comes Hamlin up the outside.
Wow.
Crash into the wall, into the air goes Newman.
Upside down.
Denny Hamlin has won the Daytona 500 for the second year in a row.
It's a weird balance of, you know, excitement and happiness for yourself, but obviously someone's health and their family's, you know, bigger than any win in any sport. So, we're just hoping for the best.
Moss dribbling around the perimeter to Dotson, wide open for three. Bang! He knocks it down, and the KU lead is eight. Garrett down the heart of the floor will kick to Dotson on the left wing. He wants another three, and he's going to get it. Devon Dotson's got 21. Now a steal for Dotson. Dotson to the cup. Right-hand layup good, and the foul. A chance at a three-point play.
And now, at 48 years old, one of the 50 youngest people in surprise, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on a beautiful Arizona day. I hope the weather is holding in Kansas City. We got a lot coming your way today here in the program. Tim Grunhardt is going to join us in the program. Gary Parrish, college basketball insiders, the fixtures of the Tuesday lineup will be with us today here in the program, and we expect to bring you a lot from Surprise Arizona as well. I think we're going to hear from Khalil Lee, and we'll see. We'll see who we can get to drop by the table, but a lot coming your way. I know we're planning on talking to Hunter Dozier here in the next couple of days, Nicky Lopez. I already mentioned Khalil. Nicky Lopez, let's see, Dayton Moore scheduled to join us at some point. Who else? Who else are we going to be talking to? What are we went through the names.
Brad Keller, hopefully, will sit down with us.
Keller. Yes, looking forward to talking to Brad Keller here in the program. So a lot of folks. Pedro Grifol, looking forward to talking to Pedro.
He's great.
Danny Duffy, all scheduled to join us here either today or tomorrow or the next day or the next day. So a lot coming your way. And we continue to work hard to bring you as much as we can from Royals spring training. We'll see if the Astros topic dies down with the fellas. But a lot coming your way today. So Chiefs football, a lot of Royals baseball, college basketball as well. We'll cover it all, and we'll start with the college basketball. First, Soren Petro here in Surprise, Arizona. Jed Marshall, Curtis Siebelt, back in the studios at Sports Radio 810 WHB. And Rock Chalk Jayhawk covering the 16.5 against Iowa State, 91-71. The 800th win in Allen Fieldhouse. Are you guys aware of that?
I wasn't until I heard some of the pregame as they went in. Bob Wischusen mentioned that 799 times fans had come there to see them win. So I had not been aware of that heading into it, but that's pretty big number.
Do you know where the number is as far as losses?
Probably somewhere in the upper 100s.
Yeah, they don't lose there much. I'd even say high single or double digits.
Give me a number each, and we'll call a winner. 80. We like to compete in the program. We don't just mess around with participation ribbons.
I'm going to say 125.
87.
Wait a minute. I love how Curtis's upper 100s became 125. What the hell is the lower 100s?
101.
I think you went somewhere. Jed went opposite you, and you bailed. You lost all confidence in yourself.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
All right, so your official number is what?
125.
Jedro?
Still at 87.
Jed was 27 away. Curtis was 11 away. You should have pinned him down first. 114 losses to go against 800 wins in Allen Fieldhouse. It is just amazing what that program is when they are in Allen Fieldhouse. And congrats to the Jayhawks and the Jayhawk fans. Because that is an incredible accomplishment. Is Duke the only building? I know Duke's beyond 800. They've got to be. I tried to find most wins by college basketball programs in a building, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I can't tell you I looked for hours and hours, but I spent 5 or 6 minutes and did do a Google search, which I think is really all you can ask of me, to be honest with you.
One shot and then bail.
It's more than enough effort.
One Google search, I scrolled down, clicked even over to a second screen, could not find anything more. I did see that Duke had more. But how about hitting some milestones with the Kansas basketball program? Bill Self gets win number 700. The program gets win number 800 in Allen Fieldhouse, and Self is now what, 4 or 3 wins away? Can't remember what it is from 500 wins at Kansas.
I mean, it's the history of Kansas basketball is well known, but they're clicking off some numbers that have put them. They're putting him in, and Bill Self in particular, in some pretty elite territory. I mean, we knew when he came to Kansas 16 years ago that there was some promise there, and that promise has been more than lived up to. Pauley Pavilion might be one that I think I'd probably put in the top five. It's been around since 1965, but Allen Fieldhouse has almost 10 years on that. So I'd bet they're probably third, but they're not close to 800.
By the way, and maybe it's just me and the fact that I'm broadcasting in the sun, but we know you're the big announcer voice guy, Curtis.
Right.
But am I the only one that thinks Curtis is crushing us volume-wise? Just a sidebar.
I'll back away.
Maybe it's, like I said, maybe it's just I need to fiddle with the dials here. My magic box that allows me to broadcast from Arizona is hidden under a white towel to try to keep it from bursting into flames in the desert sun. So if I need to do something, guys, just tell me if I need to boost anything.
No, I think it's probably me.
Okay.
I'm talking too loud.
Yeah, it's you, you know?
It's me.
Always drawing attention to yourself.
I don't mind.
Yeah. But anyway, just another win. They're supposed to win. They did win. That's what Kansas does. And I don't know that you can tell the story of the game last night without talking about tonight's game. Baylor, a 4-point favorite at Oklahoma. I know Iowa State was in Allen Fieldhouse, but we know that we have talked many times. What Kansas does is not spit the bit on the gimmies, on the ones you're supposed to handle. At OU is a much tougher game than facing Iowa State without Halliburton. In your own barn, we know that, but Iowa State did just clobber Texas, so there was ability there. Kansas handles business. It's what they do. And, you know, we're going to see if Baylor handles business tonight in a tougher game. Granted, a tougher game, but if you want to, you know, be the man, you got to beat the man. Granted, I get it that it was Texas Tech and K-State last year. But in this league, the man is the Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah.
So if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. And sometimes you got to beat the men that the man beats.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And that's the challenge tonight with Baylor at Oklahoma. But Kansas needing to keep the keep pace, and they did with a very impressive win against Iowa State.
And for Baylor tonight, not looking forward to Saturday. Kansas didn't look forward to Saturday last night when they play Saturday against Baylor and Waco. And going into last night's game, I thought the only shot that Iowa State really had, they had to do a number of things, but one of the things they had to do was hit threes, and it kept them close for much of the first half. They hit 9 of 11, I think, in the first half from three. And they were still down 10, but they would have been down much more had they not. And then in the second half, Kansas just kind of shut it off. They still allowed, they allowed 31 points, but they pretty much shut off the threes, just 2 of 11. So it's even when a team comes into their barn and does almost exactly what they want, 11 of 22 from 23 from 3, 48%, Kansas still has the wherewithal to kind of get up and walk away. And it's now that they're starting to get production from more than one guy, big-time production. I mean, it's not just Doak. It's, you know, Dotson's been fantastic. Abaji was good last night. Garrett does everything. So that they've become much more of a complete team and can win in more than one way. They don't just have to shut you down. They now have shown that when they have to, they can score. They're very dangerous.
They are dangerous, but do we have to caution ourselves? Does Kansas have to maybe say, look, we also, you know, anyone who's coached knows that you have good days and you have bad days, right? And if you can win on your bad days, that's a great accomplishment. But also not getting too excited about days that, like, listen, this isn't who we are week in, week out. I do think your point's very good, Curtis, in the sense that the last two games they've scored 87 and 91, but it is Oklahoma and Iowa State against West Virginia. They scored 58. Great game in its own right, but they scored 58 against TCU on the road. They scored 60. Again, wins.
Mm-hmm.
They won with their defense, and that's the sign of a team that, you, to your point, I think your point's valid. They can score. They're getting better offensively. There's no doubt about it. But 6 of 8 from three from, you know, Dotson, that's not reality either, though,
no.
Right?
No, that's true. That's true. And one thing I was thinking last night before the game, it's thought of as a positive for Kansas in that, you know, there's no super team. Like, this isn't a great team. I wouldn't put this in the top five teams that Bill Self's had at Kansas. Not really, not close to me at this point. I think the 08 team was better. I think the 10 and 11 teams were better. Probably the one of the 17 or 16 or 17 teams with Frank Mason and then Devontae Graham are probably better. But this is one of those years where everyone looks around and says, well, there's no great team. There's no 15 Kentucky and Duke and Wisconsin they have to contend with. The negative to that, though, is the idea that there's this big wash of 1 to 16 or 1 to 20 is would make you think that Kansas has as good a chance to win as any. The problem with that is if when you're on that wash, that means you're going to have to play probably at least two games against teams that are kind of as good as you just to get to the Final Four and then
right.
win two more to win it all. And the more that wash continues, the more likely you are to have just an off night. And if any team that's in the top 20 has an off night against one of the other teams, they're done.
You know, I will. And can we stop with the it's wide open this year, right? Is it? Don't we have at least Baylor, Gonzaga, San Diego State, Kansas up there? Can we at least say that we know Gonzaga and San Diego State plays against lesser competition, but they're dominating the crap out of them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're not losing. They're not getting tripped up. And then KU and Baylor are handling business. They did in the non-con. KU's played the best schedule of any of those four, and now they're on a roll handling business. And that these four teams, while I don't think any of them, like if you want to say, well, I don't think this Kansas team is as good as, you know, the Virginia team that won it all last year. Okay, I'm fine with that. But they're not light years behind them.
Right.
Right. And Kansas isn't the same as Butler. Right, they're better. Mm. These four teams, really, particularly with Louisville taking a couple of losses recently, these four teams, and maybe Duke's going to push their way in there as the fifth team. Maybe I shouldn't breeze past them. You know, these handful of teams have set themselves aside that while they may not be as good, and the distance you're shooting from three has maybe brought down the level of play that they are at. They are definitively the best ones in this class. Maybe they're more vulnerable than others, but to act like, you know, the team that's sitting on the bubble right now, OU, or somehow some people think Texas is near the bubble, they're not right next to Kansas. There's a huge gap.
Yeah,
there is a chasm for sure between those teams. Kansas has, again, established itself as a true number one seed. If they go through this and they lose to Baylor two more times, they're a one seed. They're
right.
a one seed.
Right.
Right. That's if they lose down in Waco and they lose in the Big 12 tournament to Baylor and that's it, that's all the blemishes on the record, they will be a one seed.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitively better than everybody else. Baylor will cement itself as the 1-1. Now, I do think that this was one of the best games for Kansas, right? I think they played really well. So to expect them to shoot like this, I don't think you can do. After going 6 for 8 from 3-point range, Devin Dotson is shooting 30.8% from three. All right, so we know that this was, hey, his best day. His best day shooting. He was 5 for 5 at one point and then finishes 6 of 8. And I think that we can say that's not real, right? That's not game in, game out.
Mm-hmm.
That you're expecting that from him. All right, so that's one of the things that I think is going to have to be a little bit different, you know, with them. But I do like the fact I think you should count on. Moss was 0 for 4. Garrett was 0 for 2. You know, and Aruna was 0 for 2. It's not like everybody was hitting. Brown hit 3 for 4. And I think what this team is going to need is either Brown or Moss have got to be on, because those are the guys that are supposed to be able to shoot. And then out of Abaji and Dotson and the rest of the crew, somebody else needs to have a pretty good day. Doesn't have to be a career day, but needs to have a pretty good day if they're going to go win on offense. They probably aren't going to ever have to just win with offense because they are one of the best defensive teams, if not the best defensive team in college basketball. But I think there's a lot to like out of the way this Kansas team is playing, and like they always do. And if you're a Kansas fan, you hang your hat on it and you celebrate it. If you're a fan of another team, you just hate it because here they come getting better and better and better, which is a true sign of coaching. I mean, this is what Bill Self teams do. They get better and better and better as the season progresses.
Same old, same old.
Yeah.
We've been watching it really for 17 years.
What do we think the number's going to be down at Baylor?
Oh, man. If Baylor takes care of business tonight, I'd imagine it's going to be, what? I'm not a good spread guy, but I'd say 3.
Yeah, Baylor probably minus 2, 2.5.
Yeah, something along those lines. It'll be interesting to see. Baylor getting 4 at OU, right? That number seems a little low, doesn't it?
It does seem a little low, at least to me. When I heard it this morning on the Border Patrol, they were talking about it. I thought the same thing. Oklahoma is a talented team, maybe not as bad as their record shows in a weird Big 12, but I think like one of the things that you've mentioned all along is Baylor is a very talented team and they've been playing well all season, but maybe they reached their peaking point earlier in the year. Maybe the gambling side is seeing that, but I don't know if Brady Manick and the rest of the Sooners are making shots. I guess they could keep it close. I don't think that they're going to be able to pull the upset there at Lloyd Noble with, you know, 1,500 people there.
They just haven't beaten up anybody on the road, with the exception of Kansas, as far as like double digit wins. Most of their road games have been pretty close. 7 points. BK State at by 6. I mean, keep it close.
I like this game to stay close. I like OU. I'm with you. I think Baylor is kind of coming back to the pack. I think Lon Kruger can flat out coach. I like OU in the points. I'm not saying OU's going to pull the upset. Lebo's waving me off right now. He's telling me I'm drinking. I'm drinking. I have been drinking, but it's been at least 16 hours. At least 16 hours since my last Corona Premier. By the way, much love to our sponsors, Corona Premier. It is for sale here in Surprise. We can confirm that the Corona Premier is here. I digress. I like OU and the points. We'll see what happens. We'll talk more about that game maybe a little bit later on. Mizzou, Curtis, take your victory lap. We didn't get to them yesterday. Yeah. Explain to me what the hell is going on with the Missouri Tigers, how they can look so god-awful and then go stick it to Auburn. Was that more about Mizzou or more about Auburn?
If you saw the before the game, they showed a clip of Bruce Pearl talking to his team about, you know, all road wins are tough, and he was basically imploring his team, do not play, you know, let up on this one. Do not come into this lightly, but, you know, play your ass off. And if for a team that sunk Kansas with the outside shot, did nothing from beyond the arc, and they didn't seem to adjust and try to go inside until later, so that helped Missouri a lot. But again, they hit shots. I mean, Missouri hit shots, and they showed some toughness at times. Every time Auburn made a run, Missouri answered it, and that's something that they hadn't done before. Pinson is becoming a better and better player. Drew Smith was fantastic. I mean, they had two guys that had really standout games. But what not only impressed me about just other than the individual performances was the toughness that they showed. The crowd got it. That's as loud a crowd as I can remember hearing at Mizzou Arena for a long time. And I think they're starting to feel better about themselves. This is the best stretch of basketball. They've won 2 out of 3 and played really well in the game they lost. This is easily the best stretch of basketball I've seen them play under Konzo Martin in quite some time. They're getting guys that are making some plays, and it kind of bodes well a bit for the future. And that most of them, and Drew Smith's a redshirt junior, but that these guys are coming back for next season. So I think it's a combination of guys are hitting shots, and I think they're feeling a little bit better about themselves, and it's caused them to be a better team, maybe on the defensive end, and just have a better mental outlook when they come into games. They walk on the court thinking they can win now, and that's huge. And they got Ole Miss tonight, and they're a small favorite. They're kind of both kind of middling teams, but this is the best I felt about Missouri basketball in quite a while, and that tells you how bad it's been. That just after 2 out of 3 wins, I'm like, hey, how about them Tigers? But man, they earned it. They fought their ass off on Saturday and came away with a win against a really good team.
they go up against a team that looks like them. If they lose, then I think that that answers to me about Auburn. Auburn looked past. Auburn had a rough day. I mean, do we really think – and again, they're playing better. I don't want to take away from what he's doing. Mm-hmm. They are playing better. That's undeniable. But if we're to talk about serious progress, right, you know, then they need to go win a game when Smith and Pinson don't go collectively 17 of 26 from the field.
Right.
18 of 21 from the free throw line and 4 of 6 from 3. I mean, that's obviously a big part of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we discussed that. I mean, when they beat, was it Arkansas? Was it whoever it was the Saturday before that? Well, it didn't look like they played any better offensively. Like their scheme didn't look better. The way they ran the offense didn't look better. They just hit shots. Well, they hit 55% from the floor, and that's it from a team that's generally been in the upper 30s all year. They're not going to do that game in and game out, and they needed to do that to win this game, but they were playing almost a top 10 team. So the fact that they're getting Smith and Pitt, it's two guys, and then you do occasionally get some output from Trey Jackson, who did not have his best night, but Pickett can be good. He didn't have a very good night, but it's going to take more than one guy, I think, to continue. And the fact that they've done this without Mark Smith and Jeremiah Tillman, which I've given up expecting much from Tillman, but Mark Smith was one of the better players in the team coming into the season, and he hasn't been there the last three games. I think that's – get him back and get him healthy, and then I think you have a third scoring option. But to me, it's been about Pinson. He's the one guy that I think has the ability to kind of take over a game on the offensive end. He's the one guy who you just give him the ball and he can create something. And when you add that to Drew Smith's ability to hit shots, that certainly makes their offense a lot better if the shots fall.
Right, right. Ole Miss at Arkansas, at Vanderbilt versus Mississippi State, at Ole Miss versus Alabama. There's not one game on there they can't win. They need to finish strong. That's what needs to happen. This needs to be a springboard to future accomplishments, and then they're going to be down towards the bottom in the SEC tournament, so they're going to have a chance to play some similar teams to themselves and put some more wins on there, a chance for Missouri to get some momentum. But there's no doubt scoring 83 and beating Arkansas, getting to 78 and losing at LSU in a close one and scoring 85 now against Auburn. There are teams that may pace yourself to get you up there, but they got it done, and they've won two out of three and look good in the one loss. There's no doubt Missouri is playing better basketball. We'll see what happens tonight. They're a 1.5-point favorite against Ole Miss, the game on SEC Network. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some Royals baseball. Conversation I had with Khalil Lee over by his locker. We'll talk about that next, what his role can be and should be and what Royals fans should expect it to be. That's next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Been doing that a few years.
Cool, long time.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are live in Surprise, Arizona. No birds chirping now. No fighter planes roaring across the sky right now. But stay tuned.
Yes.
Stay tuned. We are in the heat of it on the side of the building that we're at as the sun is baking down right now. But as we get a little bit later, the birds will probably make their way over here. No shade where we are, but make no doubt about it. We're on the apron here at beautiful Surprise Stadium. No college baseball today, so it should be much quieter than what we had yesterday. Soren Petro with you here in Surprise. Todd Lebo, Ali Trost out on assignment with me here in Arizona. Curtis Siebel, Ted Marshall running things back at the studios. Want to play a conversation I have with Khalil Lee, one of the outfielders that the Royals are counting on to be a part of their future, and a guy that, I don't think did anything to harm his chances being a part of this ball club in the very near future, and maybe the openings even more so than you might realize. Listed as outfielders on the 40-man, Alex Gordon, Nick Heath, Brett Phillips, Jorge Soler, and Bubba Starling. We know that Hunter Dozier and Whit Merrifield also in that mix. So seven guys on the 40-man roster that I would say you would look at and go, okay, those guys are in the mix in the outfield. But how many of those guys do you feel like, okay, they've got a spot? Soler has a spot. He may mostly fill the DH spot. You know, Starling's got his shot. Phillips has had a shot. Neither one of them have just grabbed it and run with it. Nick Heath, another minor leaguer. Gordon has his spot. As long as he's healthy, I don't think you sign him to have him watch, so he's probably going to play out there in left field. And I think that speaks to where they think the timeline is on Khalil Lee and anybody else in the outfield, that there will be certainly a full year of at-bats for Alex Gordon. He wouldn't be there. And between DH and right field, a full year of at-bats for Jorge Soler. So that speaks to what they think of what's going on with the outfielders in the minor leagues. Let's hear from Khalil Lee, who led the Texas League last year with 53 stolen bases, something we'll talk about. Still had a on-base percentage, I think 365-ish, his on-base percentage. Takes his walks. One of the few guys in the Royals organization that does that, regardless of level, that is willing to take his walks. Now at Northwest Arkansas, full season at Northwest Arkansas last year, I asked him, you know, being in the big league clubhouse, having that kind of year, does it feel like it's getting close? Do you feel like you can almost kind of touch the big leagues?
Yeah, you know, just being in this clubhouse, being in the big league clubhouse, it obviously, you know, feels like, you know, it's right in the palm of my hand. But it's still a lot of work to be done, like you said. You know, there's no spots is going to be given to me. So I'm here to work, you know, just put my best out on the field and see what happens.
Playing a lot of center field, you know, that's a little bit of an adjustment for you. How do you think that's going?
It's going pretty well. I've played a lot, you know, all around the outfield coming up, so playing more center. Center's where I first started playing, you know, through high school, you know, travel ball, all that. So it's kind of my natural position, I would say. But you know, just being able to run around center field and cover a lot of ground is something that I like to do, you know. But I can also play left or right too. So, you know, working all three positions is going to be key for me, you know, wherever the club might need me, so I can be, you know, versatile.
I know you got to focus on the job at hand, but have you taken a look at center field in Kauffman Stadium? I mean, people talk about how big it is, how much room there actually is.
Oh, yeah. The Kauffman Stadium is known to be big, so, you know, you need to have a lot of three guys in covered ground out there. So, yeah, especially being in center field, it's going to be a lot of work, you know, covering all that ground.
Yeah. I believe you led the Texas League in stolen bases last year, right?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And,
Goal? Was it something you wanted to do?
It was a pretty good accomplishment. I mean, I wasn't really looking too much at it until probably about the end of the season where I saw I was leading. So I wanted to, you know, then I wanted to say, all right, I might as well. I did it a whole season. I might as well stay up there at number one. But it was a good, me and Nick Heath were running on him all day. So that was good. When he went up to AAA, that kind of gave me more attention on the base pass. But it was good. It was good, you know, running out there, getting bags. Probably, that was the most bags I've ever gotten in a season. So it was a lot of fun.
Was it something you just wanted to do, or was the organization pushing you, saying, hey, we really want you to expand this part of your game?
Yeah, they definitely wanted me to run more, you know, and then obviously working on with Rusty and working with Damon Holland, so trying to figure out how to steal bases and actually perfect the base stealing craft. So I've been working on it, so then to finally put it all together during the season was good to see.
Now, has the organization talked to you about what the plan is for you, what your timeline is?
No, I haven't gotten any specific information yet. You know, I'm just coming out here, obviously, in camp. You know, there's always opportunity to make the club for everybody, you know, whenever you get to big league camp. So, you know, obviously I'm going to work hard and see where I end up.
Yeah, have you talked to any of the guys, any of the veterans, giving you any wisdom so far on what to do?
Yeah, for sure. I talked to a lot of guys, you know, pitchers and position players. Talked to Duffy, talked to Witt, you know, talked to those guys, and they just told me, you know, put my work in and, you know, leave, if I don't break with the team or whatever, just leave an impression for the higher-ups, for Matheny, you know, for Dayton, so that if they do need a guy later on in the season, whatever, during All-Star break, whatever, after All-Star break, they'll have that memory of, you know, Khalil was working hard in spring training. I saw him working hard doing his thing, so you know, that's what I'm trying to do. Just leave, if anything, leave a good impression so that if my name does get called later on in the season, if I don't make the team out of spring training, then I'm ready to go.
Sure. One last question. Wilmington, right? I only know it from afar, right? The numbers that are there. Seems like it's like hitting underwater or something. Like, what is it that makes Wilmington such a pitcher's park and difficult on hitters? And is it something you have to guard against, like psyching you out?
Yeah, Wilmington is, for me, it was a better league for me because I feel like, you know, the strike zone was better, you know, pitching. seeing pitches a little bit more closer around the strike zone, around the plate. You know, then it was also a challenge. A lot of guys were throwing good pitches more consistently and things like that. You know, the park played for me pretty well because I'm a, you know, lefty, you know, right center to right field. That's where the ball travels more. You know, center over to right center is like the wind tunnel, I would say. Okay. But left field doesn't fly very well, so you know, a lot of righties I think would probably struggle more than the lefties. But just the park in general is good for our pitchers as well. You know, so yeah. It works yeah. both ways. You
Absolutely.
Know.
So, absolutely.
But, yeah, you're going to hit a lot of homers on the road in Wilmington for sure. You know, a lot of extra base hits on the road. But, you know, if you get in the gap in Wilmington, you can run a little bit. So it works both ways, you know, for pitchers and for hitters. You know, more lefty hitters, but for sure for the pitchers, it's a good park to pitch in.
Very good. Well, Khalil, congratulations on the work you've done so far. I know you got another big step to take, but looking forward to seeing you in Kansas City real soon.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Khalil Lee. 65 walks last year in 129 games. So that would equate out to a 162-game season if you keep that going. You know, if he played 162, 81 walks. And, Curtis, what's the number we've talked about? Like, Kevin Seitz is the last guy to have 100 walks, but he's also the last guy to have 80, right?
He was the last guy to have, I think it was it 90? I think it was just 90.
I know what.
Yeah,
I thought it was even as low as 80.
It might be. Let me check that. But it's one of the more stunning and because of that, one of the more underplayed stats in a sports filled with stats that the Royals haven't had a guy
right.
have 90 walks.
And a stat Seltzer. That for at least 15 years, 20 years, I don't remember when Moneyball came out, has been highlighted as one of the keys to having success in the game. And the Royals still not approaching taking that number down is amazing. So Khalil Lee is a guy that's very different in this organization. You know, a 363 on base percentage last year. That's everything you want from a leadoff hitter and doing it with just a 264 batting average. So I think that is huge. And I wonder if, you know, he finished up in 2018 in Northwest Arkansas, that he spent all of 19 in Northwest Arkansas. I'm almost wondering if they aren't kind of backing him up, letting those pitchers get there with him. You know, they had that wave. They seem to love that wave. And I'm going to give you a reason why that sounds great. Hey, let's get the band back together and do what we did last time to win a World Series in 2015. They all came up together. Well, that's great. You know, if he was ready for the bump to AAA, this also means that they all become free agents at the same time, again, as well. And if you're looking at sustaining the success, then you don't want to be watching, you know, six of your you know, 10 core players become a free agent in the same year. It needs to be a couple every year, and you can pick one of the two to keep in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, maybe you trade in the offseason before they get to free agency to get more young pieces and keep, you know, filling it. But whatever the reason is, maybe they wanted the batting average higher. Maybe they want, I don't know, whatever their reason was. I think it's clear that a couple things need to occur. Nicky Lopez, who we're hoping to talk to, and it's said he'll talk to us, barring some kind of scheduling problem, we'll talk to Nicky Lopez out here during this camp. Nicky Lopez needs to grab a hold of second base and not have it just be given to him, right? He needs to prove that it's his spot. And Khalil Lee needs to come up and prove that he can play center field and bat leadoff. If you do that, then Whit Merrifield can be the Ben Zobrist super sub. Play every day, just play every day somewhere, right? And become that ultimate utility guy that not only is giving guys a day off, but giving guys a day off and giving you great at-bats. It's not just a Sunday lineup of, okay, it's getaway day, we'll throw whatever out there because we got to give guys a break. But Witt can be bouncing around the diamond to different spots, or Witt's going to go back to second and Khalil Lee play center field, right? I mean, these are two guys in Nicky Lopez and Khalil Lee that the Royals need to hit like big leaguers. And if they do, Whit Merrifield's value goes way back up. Because in center field, he hits like an average center fielder, and he's probably going to play center field. If he's an average center fielder, which is the best defender on the field for your ball club, then they've got something there.
Sure.
But ideally, he's much more valuable playing average to above average defense all over the place with his bat than he is being locked into the outfield. And for that to become a reality, either Jorge Soler has to figure out how to play right field, But we know Gordon's back for 1 year, but for just 1 year. They need a couple of outfielders to come up and make that work. Whether that's Sully Matias, who showed no frequency of contact last year, whether that's Brett Phillips, whether that's, you know, Khalil Lee, they've got to get some guys to come up through this. Or whether it's free agency, which as of right now, they have not really, you know, looked like they want to go out and attack. You know, somebody's got to grab hold of one of those outfield spots, and Khalil Lee looks like the guy who's best equipped to do it.
And it's, you mentioned Gordon's back for 1 year. He wouldn't be if they had someone ready to do that. I mean, it's, he's kind of here because they don't have that guy. By the way, I looked, and I'm going to use this as an end of the hour question at some point today. Seitzer was the last guy to have 90 for the Royals, and he had 102 in 1989. They've only had three guys with 80 since then. That wow. is unbelievable. That's 20, see, 90, see, 89, so 90. That's 29 years. Three guys with 80 walks.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing. And so Khalil Lee's ability to get on base is a big bonus for the Royals. And a guy that, listen, I think you could see it midseason. I think you could see him if he starts. You know, I talked to some people, they kind of thought Double A was where he's going to start. I'm like, really? Okay, you know, in Dayton we trust. I'm not going to bash him. He's only 21 years old. He'll turn 22 in June. So he's age appropriate if he's back in Double A. I think if he does start in Double A, it's quick to Triple A, and Triple A may be a quick one. I think you'd like to believe that in the second half of this year, if you need a center fielder, Khalil Lee can step in and be that guy. That would be a really good spot for them to be in if that can be the case.
And he seems like he's going to take the right approach to it. I loved his answer about what are you going to do until then. You know, he's going to work his ass off and make sure that when they get to the point where they're thinking about who they want to bring up, that they'll remember what he did earlier in the year and use that as a plus. He certainly, at 21, he has the right, certainly has the right ethic, the right approach to it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Affable kid. Really like talking to him. So I think Royals fans will really enjoy him when he does get to the big leagues. We will take a break. We're live in Surprise, Arizona. Spring training coverage continues here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I do have better command of the language and nuances and inflections than you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're on the Program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro back with you in Surprise, Arizona. We're going to talk some Chiefs football. Tim Grunhard going to be with us in our next segment. A little grunny talk. Right now, let's talk some more outfield. We were just talking about Khalil Lee. Let's talk about a guy who got to the big leagues, had his shot last year to start making his name, Bubba Starling, local guy. And I will reiterate, we will always end the program root for the local guys. And I got nothing but positivity for Bubba Starling. He's one of our own, one of our kids, and I hope he turns the corner in a big, big way. Last year, .215 batting average, .255 on base, about a .320 slug. He did hit four over the wall. Not grabbing the job like it's his and nobody else can ever do it, but getting his feet wet after a pretty good run at Triple A. Todd Lebo, talking to Bubba Starling this morning.
Yeah, there were some doubts here and there. 2017, you know, I started having oblique issues and whatnot, and it was in the back of my head a little bit, but Royals, the front office stuck with me, and I kept putting my work in, got confident, had a little anxiety stress along the way, obviously with the injuries, but overcame it all, and here I am now.
Does this feel different for you this year, knowing that you had some major league time last year? You like being here at camp right now, confidence-wise?
Yeah, getting to face the pitching, getting to face those type of guys up there, get to see what they're trying to do to you, what they got. So coming in, getting to face these guys in spring training, it'll help me out a lot.
New manager here, obviously. He was in the organization last year. What were your contacts with him at all last year, and just what are your thoughts about how camp feels this year with a new guy in charge?
Yeah, getting to be in Ryan. I started out in Omaha last year, and he bounced around to a few games in the minors. So actually, we had a few times we got to sit down and talk and just talk about baseball, life in general. And, you know, I can't wait for him to be our manager. A lot of great stuff coming.
What were those conversations like? As someone, he knew obviously who you were and then the struggles you'd had to try to get to where you were. What was his message to you?
Just overcoming those struggles, staying confident, showing up every day, being positive, being a good teammate. I think you take care of those things. You'll be better on the field. It'll just take care of itself. So.
He seems to have a really nice demeanor when talking to players. Is that how you felt?
No doubt. Meeting yesterday just fired us up. Get all of us excited, ready to head out there and get ready for the upcoming season.
27 years old. He'll turn 28 in August. No doubt it's, you know, time for him to get going and take off. We've chronicled guys that really their big league career took off at this age. It's not the norm. It's not ideal, but it's where we sit. And I think right now, listen, if Bubba Starling could be a fourth outfielder or part of a platoon, then, you know, I think you'd be content with him. Doesn't mean he, you know, lived up to his draft pick. And I think, we talk about it all the time that once you sign a guy to a contract, the money's spent. There's no point worrying about it. You can't get it back. And I think the same thing, once they drafted him, the pick was spent. And so now you just try to get as much out of Bubba Starling as you can. And defensively, they like him. One thing that scares me is, like, they didn't want to seem to play him in center field. And that had been the pitch all along, is that, hey, this is a guy who's major league ready in center field, and they didn't play him that much out there in center field. So we'll see. If you're going to play on the corners and play, the whole game, then you got to bring your bat as well, and we'll see where Bubba Starling is. He's been a guy that's needed a couple of looks at every level and maybe getting a second look at the big leagues. And nobody wants to hear this. Maybe it's not even this year. It's next year. But he's in the organization, and you control his service time. And he's a tremendous athlete. You give him every opportunity to fail before you walk away from him. Bubba Starling here in camp with the Kansas City Royals. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some Chiefs football. Tim Grunhardt joins us next here in the program.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on The Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Tim Grunhardt joins us next. Who started at center for the Chiefs in the first game after Grunny retired? Brought to you by Jazz, Louisiana kitchen.